Bibles, please turn to the book of Proverbs, chapter 23. We're going to begin reading. At verse 29. First part of the book of Proverbs is a warning to all of us about living carelessly and about rather reminding ourselves that we should not move away from our ancient landmarks, but that we should always look to the Redeemer. That comes in verse 8. And then we come down, it's a warning, don't live promiscuously, it's just a disaster, it's a deep pit, and it's just a no-end street, really. And then it comes to verse 29, Proverbs chapter 23, verse 29, New King James. Who has woe? Who has sorrow? Who has contentions? Who has complaints? Who has wounds without cause? Who has redness of eyes? Who, the answer? Those who linger long at the wine. Now I'm going to change that a little bit, and I'm going to add to it. You know, like the Amplified Bible? Those who linger long at the wine, at marijuana, at drugs, cocaine, heroin, those who linger long at these things, those who go in search of mixed wines and mixed drugs, do not look on the drugs or the wine when it is red, or when they are wrapped up in their sparkling packages, or when they sparkle in your hand or in the cup, when the wine swirls around smoothly or the drug glitters before you. At the last, it bites like a serpent and stings like a viper. Your eyes will see strange things and your heart will utter perverse things. Yes, you will be like one who lies down in the midst of the sea, or like one who lies at the top of the mast, saying, they have struck me, but I was not hurt. They have beaten me, but I did not feel it. When shall I awake that I may seek another drink, that I may seek another drug? Huge warning. Today, we're going to be looking at the three deadly snakes of our time. And as you look on the PowerPoint as we begin, the beginning has to be in the Garden of Eden when we talk about snakes. You know, last week, Judy and I have our own sort of special place. It was really Judy who found it when she went out exploring, and I can't describe the beauty of this area. It is an absolutely beautiful place. And last week, we were sitting down, and it's a little lake in Surrey. Most perfect setting. I cannot explain. It is as beautiful as anything we have ever found in Africa. It's just amazing. The grass is almost like African savanna. Those of you who know the African savanna. The trees are magnificent. And in the middle of it, there's this beautiful little lake. And it's kind of become, firstly, it was Judy's place, and now it's our place, where we just go. And we're only there for 10, 15, 30 minutes, and we feel refreshed, just sitting in the beauty of God's creation. Well, we were sitting there last week, and there's a little platform, a wooden platform. And on that platform, you can go out a little bit, and there were some dogs swimming and in the lake in front of us. And then we also had fun. We took our little dog Buddy and we threw him in the water, and he had never swum before, and he was swimming around. And then
the dogs moved away and it was quiet and we were just sitting there. And I actually took Buddy for a little walk, and as I was coming back, the most amazing thing happened right from under the platform where we sit. And I've never seen it. The only other time I've seen this is in Cornwall, was an adder. And it was swimming. It came into the water and it swam and it knew where it was going and you could see the ripples. And you knew it was an adder by the kind of shape of its head. And it went right across the lake and the ripples went across and went straight across. It knew where it was going. But what struck us is all the time we were in this beautiful setting, right next to us, you know, I might have reached out and put my hand down, I don't know. There was an adder right under us, right near us, and we didn't even know it. We didn't even know it was there. Well, in a way, Eden is a bit like that. Eden is where the serpent comes when you don't expect it, where you're not looking for it. And Eden can be anywhere where you have found peace, where you have found a place with the Lord. It can be anywhere in your spiritual life, and you don't even know, but there's a serpent there hanging around, and you don't even know it. In Eden, the serpent that came was a serpent that brought pain and destruction and death. In a way, if you think about it, what is the closest we get spiritually to the Garden of Eden in the modern age? And I want to suggest to you that this is it. Our Sunday morning service of worship, of praise, of prayer, of fellowship afterwards is Eden. It's as close as we get to Eden on earth, because it's God's people together, worshiping people, a praying people, an encouraging people. And here we are in Eden, and I want to suggest to you that when you have Eden, not far away, somewhere you've got a serpent. You've got a snake. And there will be, the more you have Eden, the more the snake will come. The deeper into the heart of that Eden it will find its way. And I want to suggest to you that even in the midst of our beautiful church, in the midst of our fellowship, in the midst of this Eden of gatherers, of worship, there is a serpent slithering around. And it's hissing in our ears. And it's saying, go and gossip about that person. You know, don't make it out like you're really being nasty. Just gossip a little bit. Gossip, gossip, gossip. The same serpent will whisper in our ears, just go and be nasty to someone today. Just turn your back on them. Find something to criticize them for. You know, just bring them down. Serpent whispering comes into the Eden and it challenges us and it whispers at us and it spits at us. Don't build one another up like the apostle said. Rather just turn your back on each other. Bicker, hurt each other, challenge each other, bring each other down. Well, that same serpent has in a way taken over the centuries the form of some of Africa's and the world's most deadliest snakes. And he has not only stayed in the Eden of the church, that same snake, that same serpent, mimicking some of the most poisonous snakes in creation, is out in the community and he is biting and he is stinging and he is bringing death and pain and brokenness and all kinds of destructiveness. And that snake is around and we are being infested with the snake in the modern generation. In Eden, he was always there. It's a beautiful word. I'd like you to learn this word. I don't know if I've taught you this word before. I want you to learn this word. It's a word that comes right out of Zimbabwe. And the South Africans borrowed it, and I don't know, the other parts of Mozambique use it a bit. But when something is going wrong, when, for example, you are in a workplace and you're pushing a huge barrel, and the barrel starts to fall, and you are suddenly in danger. What happens is people start whistling through their lips, and it goes, it's like that. And then they say, basop, basop. That's the word, basop. And when you hear the basop, you know that suddenly there's a huge, real danger around you. Something's going wrong. A car might be out of control, coming for you. Basop. A dog might be coming for you out of a fence, and it's coming to bite you. Basop. Basop. Can you say that word? Come on. Basop. Okay, we can do it together, all together. One, two, three. Basop. Okay, that word basop means be careful. It means wake up. It means this is serious stuff, man. This is real danger. It's not just another sermon. It's not just another play on words. This is real. And when the serpent comes into the Eden, when the serpent comes into a community and starts biting and stinging, it is real and it is deathly and it causes brokenness like you've never seen. You only have to ask Jennifer, the lady whose son was stabbed to death outside her home in the Prince Estate, who came and shared. And you only have to look into her eyes to see the pain and the brokenness and the emptiness that comes when that snake strikes. That snake strikes and children die. The snake strikes and Christians fall broken and hurt, wounded. It's a time to say, church, basop, wake up. It's a dangerous time. The snake has always been there since the days of Eden, slithering, scheming, stinging, wherever it can, whenever it can, at whoever it can. In the years since Eden, the serpent has taken on the attributes of some of the most poisonous and most dangerous snakes that inhabit the world. The snake, the normal created snake, let's be fair, does have its place in the wild. It is part of our ecosystem. Without the snakes to control the rats, for example, nature would shift out of balance very quickly. In its created space, a snake, like all wild creatures, reflects a certain creator beauty. Even so, to be around deadly snakes, especially if you're not switched on to how they attack, can be dangerous. The serpent of old is also hugely dangerous and at times reflects the same qualities as the most subtle of the killer snakes. We can learn from them. We can learn from those who live with them how to deal with them, how to avoid them, and if necessarily, how to kill them. Well, firstly, I want to talk to you about the cobra of chemical addiction. The cobra of chemical addiction. The first time I ever saw a cobra was when, well, one of the first times was when, as a little child, I was playing with my friend in our garden. We had a huge, big garden, rocks, trees, a river down at the bottom of the garden, beautiful place to grow up. And we were playing cricket with a tennis ball. And I was playing with my friend from school, Stuart, and we playing, and we hit the ball into the side of the garden where there was long grass. And that ball that went in there disturbed a cobra. And the cobra came out. But what is unusual about that day is most of the time when a snake is disturbed, it'll run away, it'll try and get away. Usually that's our experience. This cobra was on a mission. Maybe we had disturbed it, maybe it had young there, I don't know. But instead of running away from us, this cobra came running towards us. We were right there in the middle of the garden and it was coming straight for us, angry that we had disturbed it. Dangerous, aggressive. And we hadn't experienced anything like, I had a cricket bat, my friend was sort of moving away. I didn't know what to do about it, it was coming straight. And right at that moment, I had the most amazing dog, used to go everywhere with me, was a German Shepherd crossed with what they call a Ridgeback, a Rhodesian Ridgeback, a very devoted dog, a very loyal dog. And he would go wherever I went, he would go. If go into the bush, he would go. He was bred for the bush. And suddenly, from nowhere, my dog was between me and the cobra. Thank God for that dog. And the dog's bristles were up. And the cobra went up like this, and its hood came up like that, and it began. You could hear this, the hissing. And the cobra was coming for me, but the dog got between me and the cobra, and suddenly I froze. I wanted to shout to the dog. Everything in me wanted to shout to the dog, "Don't come away. Get away. Let's get away." The dog was in danger. A cobra can bite a lion in the bush and the lion will be dead within hours. Dead. It's been told that even elephants will die from a cobra bite. Their venom is vicious. And as the cobra was there going like this, the dog was picking it up. And I knew I had not to distract that dog. And my friend and I moved away. And we moved further and further away, down up onto a rock. And my heart was pounding. I wanted to scream to the dog, "Get away." I did not want to distract the dog. And I was only 7 or 8, but I knew I could have disturbed that dog's concentration. And for nearly 40 minutes, there was a fight. The dog would lunge, catch it on its tail, it would turn, and then eventually the cobra would try and get away. And I thought, "Oh, it's getting away." And the dog wouldn't let it get away, it would get in front of it again. And the fight went on, and I knew this was a real fight. At the end, dog was sort of down, panting, tongue hanging out a bit, panting. It was a hot day, and the snake was lying dead, motionless. And we went close. One of the guys that worked on the other side of the river came. His name was Jason. He worked on the garden on the other side. He came across with a big stick. He had seen it. And he said, "Be careful. Basop. Basop. Dead snakes can still bite," he told us. "Basop." And we went. And the dog just stood back. And eventually he picked up the dead cobra and he took it, and there was a fire in the corner of the garden where they were burning some leaves and grass, and they threw the cobra on that and let it burn. We didn't know if the dog was going to be okay. The dog was not bitten, thank God. The dog was not bitten. But I tell you something. I learned something that day. I learned something about the danger of a venomous snake that is aggressive, and it's not a game. It's real. And the other thing I learned is that snakes are around. You can be playing cricket in the most beautiful garden, having fun, and there's a snake in the long grass. You can come to church on a beautiful day, expecting nothing but joy and beauty, and someone can bite you with a venomous bite of gossip or pain or distraction and can take away your joy. The poison can go into your veins and hurt you and bring you down. But you can be a young child on the streets and the snake can bite you there even more than it can bite you here. Kind of have written a little bit of a book here for our guardrail series. But basically, it says this. In the book of Proverbs, the warning is clear. Stay away from the poisonous snake. That's the first warning of what we just read in Proverbs. Don't go to where the snake is. The snake of addiction, the snake of wine. Even if you don't have a problem drinking wine, my friends, be careful. There is a bite behind that wine. Just yesterday, a very dear pastor sent me a text, a Japanese proverb that says, first of all, a man took a drink. Then the drink took a drink. And then the drink took the man. And you and I don't even know the dangers that are behind the draw of alcoholism. It is a venom, it is an addiction that flows through your bite. And once you've had the bite, it draws you and it destroys you and it tears you down and it breaks you down. Just like you and I don't know the dangers of the chemical addictions of even marijuana. In the world today, we're seeing the legalization all over of marijuana. And they're saying, we'll make it legal, we'll do it right. I'll tell you something, and I want to tell you something right now. There was an area along the Zambezi River in Zimbabwe where the Batonga people culturally have always had marijuana. They've smoked it. It's part of their culture. It's part of their religion. And even under colonial times and in the new Zimbabwe, it is legal for those people to have marijuana. But I want to tell you something. When you go to that area, what you go to and what you expect from the Batonga people, they are known for this, is a high level of schizophrenia. It's part of their culture. It's part of who they are. They manage it, but it is there. It's prevalent in them. And everybody knows it's because from young they're smoking. And they become paranoid. They become schizophrenic. And they become absolutely broken in their communities because of it, the Batonga people. Well, somehow the world has now become the Batonga tribe. Marijuana has been legalized wherever it is, but I'll tell you this. It doesn't mean that the venom isn't any less painful just because they've made it legal. It doesn't mean that it isn't any less dangerous because people light up marijuana. Now, I think there's a place for medical marijuana. I agree with that. And under medication, there's a place for that. No problem with that. But I'm talking about just generally, the danger of smoking from a young age breaks you down. It creates paranoia. It creates schizophrenia. And it creates problems that will hurt you, your friends, your loved ones, and your family. It is also a gateway. The South African police came once to Petra in Zimbabwe, in Bulawayo, and they showed pictures of what was happening in South Africa. And they said how marijuana became the first step towards cocaine, heroin. And then they began to show us pictures. Have you ever seen the end result of heroin? I have. I saw it on those pictures. I also went with my friend, who my cousin in Amsterdam back in the 60s and 70s when I visited him, and the students from the university in Amsterdam would go and bring milk to those addicted on heroin. And all I could see there was broken people, shriveled people, literally lying in a fetal position, about to die, and we'd try and give them milk to drink because that's all they could have. And they were dying, and they were filthy, and they were broken, and they were destroyed by the bite. The poison had destroyed them. Said of Whitney Houston, I was looking recently the other day, that she began taking cocaine recreationally. She never realized when the recreation had become an addiction, and the addiction is what killed her in the end. It is a poison, and it destroys, and it breaks you down, and it tears you apart. And that poison is in our streets. It is in our estates. The snake is there, and it's designed to destroy. It knows how to attack. There was a teenager who was good with snakes, and he came and he got a snake out of the car. His name was Samanth Matari from Delhi in India. He was 18 years old, and he plucked the cobra from the car, and he wanted to go and relocate it and put it in a safe place. But then he posed for a photo, and he, at the back of its hood, it was a cobra, he tried to kiss it for the photo. And as he did that, the snake turned and stuck its fangs into its chest, the Daily Mail. This tragedy reflects the way our London gangs and drug addicts are treating the danger of kissing the hood of drug taking and selling. The snake turns, it bites. Young people, children are dying on the streets in front of us. The deadly game of gateway drugs and gangs in London begins when children as young as 8 are inducted into the practice. Even younger, I'm hearing. children as young as 8. This isn't just a statistic in a newspaper. This isn't just a story. This is happening across the road. Children as young as 8 years old are being inducted by the gangs to run, to sell, to peddle. In the drugs, it's like you're saying to a child, take the snake in this paper packet and go and sell it. You're giving the child the cobra and you're saying, play with it, run with it, take it. And it's happening. It's happening, Jamie, in Winstanley Estate. It's happening here at the Prince. It's happening all around us that children as young as 8 are being given living snakes, living cobras to run with, to play with. The gang culture thrives in the community. Geographically, the estates and postcodes of London lend themselves to a thriving territorial gang culture. The gang provides protection to those that are included, but a cold hostility and exclusion to those who don't get involved. The rise of social media has created a new platform for an old evil. It is evil. Gangs have cold, steel-like fingers that reach deep into the community. London schools are infiltrated by gangs. I know that. I've been there. I've seen it. I've been part of it. Outside, gang lords dictate school activity through manipulation of their own foot lackeys. Where before it was considered an honor to represent your school, and where school colors, leading by example, it is now very uncool to be seen to be succeeding, and very cool instead to wear gang colors. Gang names or street tags become the new normal. To give the street name street credit, antisocial behavior must be seen to be done, even in the extreme. There are credible recent reports of gang stabbings where numerous, up to 8, 9, 12 different blades have been plunged into a single victim, each blade creating a new sense of street credit for the attackers. The stronger and more organized the gang is, the more protected are the runners. There is something hypnotic and seductive about the gateway into the world of drugs and gang violence. And just like the fearful animal in the thrall of a swaying cobra, our London children are drifting into disaster. So what do we do about it? Book of Proverbs says it stings when it bites. Its poison will hurt and destroy you. The Book of Proverbs tells us, just don't go there. For the most part, I want to say this, African children do not get cobra bites. They don't. Like in Proverbs 23, they are taught avoidance. Do not look on the wine when it is red, when it sparkles in the cup, when it swirls around smoothly. Rural African children, from the day they begin to walk, are taught how to avoid the deadly cobra. They are taught how not to go where a cobra presence is known, how to respect and run away from an unexpected encounter with a cobra, and above all, where possible, how to get help in removing a cobra that enters their living space. African children, although they don't have shoes, although they're vulnerable, if you will, to what could happen if they had a bite, generally don't get cobra bites. One of the reasons that they don't get cobra bites is this. They actually are protected by their parents. You can go on any day, on any afternoon, on any evening and any morning to a rural place or village where the African children live. And one thing you will see is you will see the mother with a branch, a whole stash of twigs and sticks made into a broom. And she will be clearing the whole area around the huts. She'll be clearing it every single day, 3-4 times a day. All you do is you see them sweeping, sweeping, sweeping. They are not just sweeping to keep it clean. It's clean. One sweep will do that. They are sweeping to protect. They are clearing their homes. And if they see or sense a serpent, that serpent won't live for another second. It will be destroyed. It will be killed. And they lead by example. Just like the African women protect their families in rural Africa and their children. So we need to wake up and we need to start sweeping the streets clean of this destructive snake that is out there. We need to say enough is enough and we're not doing this anymore. We need to take the cobra out. The question is, how do we do that? Well, we do it first of all by not just walking along on the other side pretending everything is okay. The first thing we do is we get together and we say, we are not happy with this. We are not going to accept this. We are going to take this on. And we are going to pray about this. And we are going to speak to the council and bring them in. And we are going to speak to those who are involved and we're going to bring them in. But most importantly, we are going to get into those estates. And we are going to say to the children themselves, you don't need to do this. The money that you get is not going to help you when you die in a back street from some addiction. You do not need to do this. The money that you get is not going to help you when a knife blade is stuck in your gut because you are peddling on someone else's territory. No, we are not going to do this anymore. We are going to clear our area. We're going to sweep it clean with prayer. We're going to sweep it clean with activism. We're going to protest. And we're going to say enough is enough. And we are going to make it uncool. Uncool for some guys to walk around feeling that they are okay and cool because they're doing the drug thing. No. No, we are saying no. It is not cool. It's not cool that children are exposed to this kind of death and humiliation and pain. It is not cool. The sparkling allure of easy money, of street fame and fortune in the gangs must be confronted from the day the child begins to walk. Every child should have an inbred awareness of the dangers of chemical poison. We have to train up our children from the cradle on the dangers of gang life and drug taking. We have to. Now, I love Bishop Tutu. He talks about this pastor who came to preach, and this man was sitting with his son in the congregation, and the pastor took his watch off and he put it down. And the son said, Dad, why has the pastor put his watch down? So he said, that's to tell him when he's finished preaching. So the son says, well, when has he finished preaching? So the dad says to the son, Son, the pastor's finished, but he doesn't know it yet. In a way, if I were to preach all that I'd prepared today, it'll be a bit like that. Because I still need to talk to you about the snake of the puff adder, of pornography. And the main thing I just needed to say to you about that is that this puff adder, the most dangerous in Africa, waits in ambush. And we all have to struggle with this one. This is one we've got to be incredibly careful of. And it keeps coming back. And it affects us and it impacts us. And we have to all switch on to this. I wish I had more time to talk about this. Is probably more dangerous than even the cobra. And then the last one that I wanted to talk to you about, I just want to talk about very quickly, which is the mambo of gangster rap. And it kind of fits with the cobra. Now, in Africa, it's called the black mambo. Because, not because of its skin, although that one looks quite dark there, they often can be brown as well. It's called black because its head is shaped like a coffin, but inside its mouth, it's just got a very black coloring inside its mouth, and that's why it's called a black mamba. And the warning in the book of Proverbs, in the end, it bites like a snake and poisons like a viper, is as true of the mamba. And the mamba that we're talking about here is the mamba of gangster rap. It kind of connects with what we were talking about in the first one. The mamba is one of the most feared snakes in the world and one of the most deadly snakes on the planet. In a recent attack, a black mamba killed a lion. It derives its name not from the color of its skin, which tends to be more gray to brown in color. Its name comes from the inside of its mouth. And the snake has a reputation for being both aggressive and poisonous. In our world, the demonic snake that is equivalent to the mamba is gangster rap. In a recent article in the Sun newspaper, we read these words, "Gangster rap, the sound of violence," talks about the father, 51-year-old Stanley, is convinced his son Jermaine would still be here if it were not for what they call drill music, a new form of gangster rap which sees gangs goad and threaten each other in videos shot on smartphones and then put online. Jermaine's killer was a prominent drill artist. His name was M. Trap O, a.k.a. 17-year-old Junior Simpson. 17-year-old Junior Simpson, who made videos in which he rapped about carrying out knife attacks, like the one that killed Jermaine last summer. Stanley, his father, 51, said, "The mindset behind..." Now listen to this. This is from the father whose son has been stabbed as a result of drill music. "The mindset behind the music is demonic in places. The beat was inside their heads. It was like rehearsing the actions they needed to do. Police say drill music is escalating gang-on-gang violence in London, which is already at crisis levels. More than 60 murder investigations right now so far this year. The force has become so concerned about the ominous trend that has even asked YouTube to take down more than 50 videos. And that's huge, because it's what does it mean to have freedom of expression and censorship? But YouTube has removed most of them. Commissioner Cressida Dick said, "These are associated with lyrics which are about glamorizing violence, serious violence, murder, stabbings. They describe the stabbings in great detail with great joy and excitement. Gangster rap is the modern day pulpit for the preaching of the doctrine of demons that Paul writes about in 1 Timothy. It is the doctrine of demons. And the pulpit is the gangster rap and the videos that are putting out these explicit stories." Recently I heard that what happens is, if something is going down, they put on their video, can you believe this is what they do? They talk about how they are going to hurt someone. And they talk about it in great detail. And they say, "We are going to come for you, and we are coming, and this is what we're going to do. We're going to hit your estate, and we're going to take you out, and we're going to take you down, and we're going to shank you, and we're going to take you down and stab you to death, and your blood is going to flow on the streets right outside your mother's house." That's what they say on the video. They say it. Then what they do is they plan the attack. And then they come, and they ambush, and they hit, and they take the person out. They find them, they stab them, they do what they said they were going to do. And they record it if they can. And then they go back and they do a second video. And on this video they say, "Hey, look what we've done. We told you we're going to do it. Now look, we've done it. That guy, he's dead. He's cold on a slab. He's gone. He might as well be thrown in the ground like a dead dog. We took him out." And they do it proudly and arrogantly. "We told you we've done it, and this is what we do." And they tell how they did it in detail. And then what they do is they go to court, and because they know how to get rid of the knives and put the scarves over their faces and all the rest so they don't get seen, they get let off. They get away with it. And then they put on, "Look what we did. We fooled the judge. We planned it, we did it, and now we're walking free, and nobody can stop us." That's what's going on. That's what's happening. That's why London is such a mess right now. The black mamba of gangster rap is one of the most cruelest, most demonic, evil symptoms of our age. And our young people are getting caught up to it, and our young people are feeling, "Hey, it's cool. The more I can be part of that, the more accepted I am." And we're saying, come on, we're not doing that anymore. We are saying, you know what's cool? What's cool is kneeling on your knees and asking Jesus to forgive us of our sins and to receive Jesus, the living God. That's cool. What's cool is having the Holy Spirit empower you and face down the tragedy that is overriding us and take the hope of the gospel and say, young people, you don't have to do this anymore. You don't have to pretend. You don't have to be part of a gang to be cool. You can know Jesus, and you and Jesus are more powerful than any gang or any rap or anything that comes from Chicago. That's what's cool. That's what's cool. And that's what we're going to do, people. But we need every one of you to be. This is a time for prayer. When the people were stuck in Dunkirk, the people went and they prayed in the church. God, deliver our people. Deliver our men. Deliver them. This is the same time. We need to get down on our knees. Say, God, give us back our young people. Give them back. Help them be strong and brave. Confident to stand on their own without this garbage, without this demonic stuff, without feeling cool. Cool to have the gang with me. Oh, God, help them to be stronger than that. Bring revival, people. Let's get involved. Amen. Amen. We're going to close by singing a final hymn. It's a time of commitment. It's a time to clean, to sweep clean from those areas that we get caught up in, to pray for our young people. It is a time to sweep our own lives clean when there's stuff in our lives, pornography and stuff that keeps coming in different ways, innocent TV programs and all the rest. All of that must be sorted out now. And we must go forward with strength and clarity. Come on, when we stand, let's make that commitment. Let's sing, let's worship the Lord.